Coming up on Boston Public Radio, before she won a special election for the state Senate seat, which includes South Boston, we asked Linda Dorsino-Forey if she'd be excited about hosting the St. Patrick's Day breakfast. She said yes, but if some leaders in Southie get their way, she won't get the chance. Then Callie Crossley will talk about the under-the-radar aspects of a casino referendum in East Boston. Then it's out to Boston College, where PETA wants the Eagles football team to stop using a real eagle as a mascot. Emily Rooney joins us on Open Mic to discuss how three Bay Staters, Kerry, Markey, and Warren, are doing in this Syria debate. And, of course, she'll present this week's Emily's List. And the Friday News Quiz will determine who will be the last comic standing. Local comedians Chris Tabb and Corey Manning will lock horns. That's all next on Boston Public Radio. Welcome to another edition of Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. Marjorie has the day off in her place because it takes two people to fill that woman's shoes. Hour two will be co-hosted by Callie Crossley, this hour by Adam Riley. How are you, Adam?
Hey, Jim. Good. How goes it?
It goes good. Well. I'm not sure it goes so well for Linda Dorsino-Forey. When Linda was running, she's a Dorchester Democratic Haitian-American woman, when she was running for the state Senate seat, which includes South Boston, we asked her here on Boston Public Radio if she'd be excited to host the St. Patrick's breakfast in South Boston if she won the race.
It's an upside, right? I am. I'm happy. I go to the breakfast every year, so I will be there again this year. They said that they're going to give me a couple minutes to say a few words, so I look forward to that. But my kids are half Irish. My husband's Irish American.
That's right.
So we celebrate Irish culture. I've been to Ireland three times. Love it.
Well, not so fast, Senator. She did win, but it appears she may not get the gig, as the Globe reports this morning. There's a split between those who think the MC is the state senator representing South Boston, as it's been for decades, by the way, and those who say, no, the host has to be from South Boston, that it's a, quote, cultural thing. I don't think the controversy is going away easily. My guess is it'll be part of the mayoral runoff just 18 days away. And we want to know at 877-301-8970, what do you think? Is this about culture? Is it about race? Or is it much ado about not much? When you woke up this morning, Adam Riley, and picked up the Globe, what was your immediate reaction to the story?
Let me answer that question this way. There is a certain set of associations that those of us who are not from South Boston have with that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like Bill Linehan trying to hold on to his hosting of the St. Patrick's Day breakfast conjured up all the worst, most toxic associations that I personally
of the old South Boston.
Of the old South Boston. And it's worth noting that there are people who are of South Boston, quoted in the article by Billy Baker, who say, no, this is Linda Dorsino's gig now. Billy Bulger says she's the one who should be doing it. Steve Lynch says, no, she's the one who should be doing it.
Both of whom were, when they were state senators, were the MCs of the breakfast because they represented South Boston.
So my intent here is not to paint all of South Boston with a broad brush, a negative brush, but I think that from the outside, I'm not sure that Bill Linehan or State Rep Nick Collins, who is on Bill Linehan's side, I'm not sure they understand how bad this makes them and their hometown look.
I am totally with you. The number is 877-301-8970. By the way, we invited the new state senator, Linda Dorsino-Forey. We invited City Councilor Bill Linehan. We invited South Boston State Rep Nick Collins. They're all in meetings. They're unavailable, so it was not for a lack of effort. We want to know what you think. Some people will say it's a breakfast. It's a private, nonprofit organization that sponsors this thing. If they want to do this, even if it troubles me, it's their breakfast to do, which, by the way, is a very parallel argument to what we heard through the years and years of the continuing debate about the exclusion of gay and lesbian organizations from the parade that follows the breakfast. Ultimately, if you don't remember, that case went to the Supreme Court of the United States that said, essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, it's a private affair, and they can exclude or include whomever they want.
Sure, they can exclude or include whomever they want, and everyone else in the world can draw whatever inferences they draw about, you know, South Boston from the decision they make. I mean, again, it just makes them look so bad.
It
conjures up images of Boston in the 70s. You know, it'd be bad enough, I think, if, say, just as a thought experiment, let's imagine that Linda Dorsino-Forey, you know, who's Haitian-American, is married to a Haitian-American man and has no connection whatsoever to Irish culture, but now is the state senator representing South Boston. It would still look bad if Bill Linehan was saying, oh, it's a cultural thing. I'm the one who should do the job. But she's got these deep ties.
Well, explain what the ties are for those that don't
know. Her husband, Bill Forey, the publisher of the Dorchester Reporter, is Irish-American. Their kids, who are absolutely adorable kids, are, you know, biracial, Haitian-American / Irish-American. She said, you know, we heard it just a moment ago, she's been to Ireland 3 times. So what better person, really, to take it over and, you know, maintain the connection with sort of the old school South Boston Irish-American ethos while simultaneously showing how Boston has progressed. So it's a shame that this is happening.
Who do you agree with in this fight? Or do you say that this is, as I said, not much worth the energy or the I am totally with Adam on this thing. I was shocked when I read this story. Bill Linehan, who couldn't make it, we should just say, he hosted last year's breakfast because State Senator Jack Hart abruptly resigned, I think, to go into law practice. Here's what Linehan had to say to the Globe this morning. It's never been stated anywhere that it has to be the state senator. It's a cultural thing. Never been anyone who hosted it who does not live in South Boston. Well, of course, there's never been a state senator representing South Boston. This is me speaking now, who wasn't from South Boston. And as Linda Dorsina Forey told the Globe, the sitting senator has always hosted. You don't have to be Irish to do it. I believe that everyone is Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Everyone's celebrating Irish culture. You don't have to be 100% Irish. And then she mentions her roots and her family with her husband, as Adam Riley just said a couple of minutes ago, her kids, and all that that sort of thing. 877-301-8970. Again, my attitude about this would be, Adam, if this were just another breakfast in another place, while it might bother me, I would say it's not even worth the energy other than reading the story. But it's because of the context within which you put this. Yeah. There is a new South Boston that is attempting, I think quite successfully in a lot of ways, to erase some of the worst of the old South Boston. And this totally feeds into all that. By the way, even if it was not the intention, and I should say that Linehan, well, I read the word cultural, immediately I'm saying cultural meaning you got to be an Irish white guy.
Yep, me too.
Which is opposed to a black woman, a Haitian American woman. I mean, his contention is you got to be from South Boston. It doesn't erase the notion, at least in my mind, and apparently yours, that it's a much more loaded word, the word cultural.
I think it's an incredibly loaded term. Yeah. Even if he doesn't have those associations that you just outlined, other people are going to have them when he uses a term like that. By the way, I want to mention that I tried to do as quickly as I could, some research checking whether, in fact, it's always been the state senator and it's always been someone from South Boston. One thing that I've heard, although I haven't been able to sort of double confirm it, but I believe Sonny McDonough, the old governor's counselor, at one time hosted the St. Patrick's Day breakfast. Sonny McDonough was not the state senator. He was hosting this as a governor's counselor, and he also did not live in South Boston when he was hosting it. He was living in Dorchester.
When was that? How long ago was that?
I believe mid-century. Now, again, this is my understanding. I haven't had a chance to, you know, actually sit down in the archives and confirm it.
The Globe cited one exception of the rule, is that Bill Bulger, who hosted it as state senator, also hosted it when he was a state rep, apparently having been asked by Joe Moakley, who went on to become a congressman.
Because he was such a massive ham, right?
That sort of thing. Now, in the spirit of full disclosure, and I always tell you that's not a spirit I embrace all the time, but I do today, NECN broadcast the St. Patrick's Day breakfast for the last handful of years, and I've been the television host, for lack of a better expression. So let's get
Lucky
that on the
you.
Table. Now, I'm assuming callers or Adam are going to talk about the quality of the breakfast, which is not really relevant to this discussion, but you can't really ignore it. In the good old days, the breakfast, I thought, was as funny and fast-moving as it gets. Here's a little bite of Bill Weld, then governor, Bill Bulger, Senate president, making a joke about Whitey Bulger winning the lottery at the St. Patrick's Day breakfast. Here it is.
You're going to be a millionaire, there is no doubt, for I had your brother pick these numbers out.
And one of the reasons that was so great, by the way, for those who don't know where Bill Weld was in his life before being governor, he was in the Justice Department and used to excoriate the Bulger brothers. And all of a sudden, he gets there. Bill Bulger is the Senate president. They become fast political friends. And ultimately, Weld appoints Bill Bulger to be the president of University of Massachusetts.
It's an incredible clip, but I'm not sure that I would identify it as I don't know what sense you meant the term great in. I listened to that.
Oh, the clip was, don't judge by the clip. I only watch on television in those days. Weld and Bulger were as quick-witted and as funny as any politician.
My point is only, you know, I just spent a couple months at the Whitey Bulger trial, and when I hear that clip, what it conjures up for me is again sort of terrible old Boston associations
that's a good point. Of
power winking at the misdeeds of itself. You know, the Weld who used to head up the DOJ. Turning Billy Bulger's mass murdering brother into a punchline, and the audience loving it too. You didn't hear sort of wincing or ooh. Everyone thought it was hilarious. So
you've totally humiliated me, by the way. I want you to know now that I realize, totally mortified. But that's fine.
I guess that's not how you're supposed to act as a guest.
No,
right?
You can do. You're not a guest. You're the co-host today. He's Adam Riley from WGBH. I'm Jim Browdy. Marjorie has the day off. Let's take a couple of calls at 877-301-8970. What do you make over the flap is too cheap a word. What do you make over the fact that the new state senator who represents South Boston, if Bill Linehan, the city councilor from South Boston, has his way, and apparently some others, Nick Collins, the state rep from there, has his way, will not host the St. Patrick's Day breakfast next St. Patrick's Day. Let's start in Linfield with Barbara. You're on Boston Public Radio with Jim and Adam. Hey there, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. And I agree with what your guest said about it making the worst of South Boston come to the surface. My connection to South Boston is that my mother grew up there back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But the real criteria for the host of the breakfast, is she funny?
Well, I have to say, Barbara, while that should be a criterion or the major criterion, I guess I would say there's another one, which is if she isn't funny enough, and we don't know, is the person who'd be sitting there funny enough himself? And while Bill Linehan took over the thing with very little notice, and the guy can really sing, we'll play him singing in a second, I think he'd be the first to acknowledge he is not exactly a wildly quick-witted, wildly funny kind of character. So it's not like they're competing against Lenny Clark for the role. Barbara.
And Barbara, I would say his predecessor, most of the breakfasts that I watched in person were hosted by State Senator Jack Hart. Very nice, likable guy, but not a bundle of laughs, really,
no,
himself.
Funny. He was okay.
He was pleasant. You could chuckle.
Steve Lynch, I think, would acknowledge now, Congressman, former state senator, who beat Bill Bulger's son, by the way, to become the state senator. I think he would acknowledge that he's not a Lenny Clark either. But, Barbara, thank you for the call. 877, I was about to give my cell phone number out, 877-301-8970. We're talking about the front page story in the Boston Globe today about this controversy that, Adam, you've been covering the mayor's race, too. Do you not agree with me that this is going to be a pretty hot question, at least for the next few days, for the 11 men and one woman who wants to be the next mayor of Boston?
I think it'll be a really hot question. I'm eager to see how they all respond to it. And it's worth noting that Nick Collins, who we mentioned earlier, state rep from Southie, he's with Bill Linehan on this. He actually ran against Linda Dorsina-Forey
in that
state Senate race that she won. So he's got kind of a grudge to pursue there. Nick Collins just endorsed in the mayoral race John Connolly, who's widely considered one of the favorites to get through to the final election. And if I were John Connolly, his campaign touted the endorsement of Nick Collins. It was supposed to be good for them in South Boston. And now all of a sudden, I think it has the potential to turn into a massive headache for Connolly because he's going to be asked about this. They're all going to be asked about it, but the focus is going to be on him, and he doesn't really need this at this point.
Who's also going to be asked about it, not that there are political implications for him, is the sitting mayor for 20 years, Tom Menino, because Tom Menino has had the courage to sit out the parade afterwards despite a lot of heat from a lot of people in South Boston.
And that's actually, this is an aside, but Menino has always been so far ahead of the curve on gay rights in particular.
Sure,
and you're right. It's 20 years ago for him to say, I'm not taking part in this thing, was a really bold move.
But you're right. The heat is particularly on Connolly, but I would argue all of them have to do that.
Yep.
Speaking about the parade after, I was thinking, God, would it be great if Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows called in? And I thought it, the phone rang, and lo and behold, there she is, Sue O'Connell. Good morning, Sue. You're on with me and Adam. How are you?
Yes, the Jim Browdy chip just goes off, and I call in.
It's frightening.
I hate to say I told you so to America, but I told you so.
What'd you tell us?
Bay Windows every year runs the list of people who march in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and we ask the organizers to include a gay group, and they refuse. And some people say, who cares? It's just a parade. What's the big deal? And whenever we have an opportunity to ask candidates if they would march if the parade excluded black people. They say, no, of course we wouldn't do that, and that's the old South Boston. That's not how it is. And I think that this is, as Adam said, a terrible slice of South Boston, just a slice of the old white guys that don't want to give up their power. And I remind folks, we were sitting all high and mighty about the Paula Deen brouhaha, about the Paula Deen using the N-word, and Paula Deen saying, I'd like to have a wedding for my brother that I organized with black men playing slaves as the servants because it's the tradition of the plantation wedding. You know, and we're just as bad as Paula Deen is on
it. Is this really as bad, though? I mean, Sue, I think it's a really interesting parallel, but maybe apples and oranges?
Why is it okay that gays get to be excluded from the parade? And it's like, well, you know, oh, now it's a big deal because, you know, Linda Dorsey-Afori is excluded. And the parade and the breakfast are associated. You know, they're not the same organization. It's not the same thing, but it's the same guys that are running it.
Well, I would say, you know, Adam asked if it was apples and oranges. I'd say it's apples and kumquats in this situation. Because unlike Paula Deen's comments, which were as unequivocal as they can get, and unlike the exclusions of gays and lesbians, which obviously it's either they're either in or they're out, while Linehan was unable to make it here today, Council Linehan, his words, we're reading, and I think we're reading incorrectly, but in all fairness, he should get an opportunity at some point to respond. It's a cultural thing. There's never been anyone who hosted it who does not live in South Boston. Both Adam and I, and I guess you, Sue, think there's much more in that word cultural than he's suggesting, but that's what his words say on the surface. And I guess the question that goes along with it, if it turned out that Linda Dorsey-Afori had been Linda Dorsina O'Connor, and even though she lived in Dorchester, she was an Irish woman over there, would there be this issue?
Or
I tend to think not, but we don't know that.
Then there's also Sue.
The day that she was elected, South Boston woke up to a black president, a black senator, a black state senator, and a black governor. And I think it was like, we gotta hold on to our peace here.
Hey, Sue, I want you to know this is the longest you've ever discussed the parade where you've not said something glowing about Tom Menino. So do you want to do it?
Yes, Tom Menino is a god. Tom Menino never marched in the parade. Tom Menino works the sidelines like a smart politician, and while other stupid politicians were marching in the parade and saying, it's tradition, Tom schooled them. We have the Tom Menino standard at Bay Windows. If you don't meet it, we're not endorsing.
So a quick question for you. Hasn't it become sort of the norm for politicians to say they're not marching in the parade? I haven't read the Bay Windows list in a while, so I can't remember how many people are still participating. But haven't most big-name pals at this point followed Menino's lead?
Well, I hate to call him out on it because I don't necessarily dislike him. But, you know, Martin Walsh marched it in March. Most of the Irish and the representatives who are representing South Boston march, Linehan marches, Lynch had a contingent in and would have marched. We had gone to Linehan and Lynch and asked them to work with the parade organizers, and these guys can't move those people. And I don't, you know, again, I don't think Linehan in his heart is about excluding people and about discrimination. But at the same time, I think there's a very strong group in South Boston that just does not want this new South Boston, many of whom are third and fourth generation South Boston.
Yeah.
But when we talk about this new South Boston, it's not people who are moving there necessarily, but people who have grown up there and look around and say, this is not who we are.
Hey, Sue, we're really glad you called. And Sue O'Connor, publisher of Bay Windows and a frequent guest and co-host right here on Boston Public Radio. Thanks for the call. You know, we're talking about Linehan a lot. And again, he's not here to speak for himself, though we did invite him, if you just tuned in. He said he had meetings this morning. Well, I think he'd acknowledge he is not wildly funny. The guy can sing. Here he is at the 2013 breakfast, the only one he's hosted, singing about Scott Brown, obviously to the tune of Danny Boy.
Oh, Scotty Boy.
Oh.
The dams are calling from cape to cape and out to the mountainside. Your term is up, the Kennedys, they are running, but not at you. They've seen your truck fly by.
But he can sing. Would you not, even if you're not with him on this issue, the guy can sing.
Lovely voice.
He does have a lovely voice.
I was kind of gazing off into the greenery outside our window here. It's thinking well, you know, the old sod. No, he
well,
has
well, you're
a great
Adam
voice.
Riley, I
yeah,
should say.
Half.
And
half.
The, oh, you are half?
Half.
Well, I'm none.
I'm
but, you know, the I think the Linehan brothers, if I remember correctly, if not, someone will correct me on the phone. I'm pretty sure the Linehan brothers all sing, and they're
really?
Quite impressive. 877-301-8970. We're talking about what Adam and I considered a fairly shocking story on the front page of the Boston Globe today, saying it is not a done deal that the newly elected state senator representing South Boston, that'd be Linda Dorsina-Forey, who's a Haitian-American who lives in Dorchester, will be the host of the St. Patrick's Day breakfast. And it is not because we think the St. Patrick's Day breakfast in and of itself is this unbelievably important event, but it has become a hugely, I don't know if I'm symbolic, political event. And I have to say, one of the first things I thought, I should have said this before. When I interviewed, I think I interviewed all three candidates. I did. When I interviewed all three candidates in the state Senate race, at least on television, I'm not sure if I did on the radio, one of the first things I thought of was one of the candidates, the two of the candidates are from South Boston. One of the candidates is from Dorchester, who happens to be black. Can you imagine a black woman, a Haitian American woman, hosting the breakfast? And you're saying to yourself, how great is this? Talk about the conversion
yeah.
of old to new South Boston. And by the way, whether you like Forey's politics or not, Dorsina-Forey, and whether you voted for her or not, if you're in the district, she is an incredibly affable,
yeah, she is.
Warm kind of human being. And that's not an endorsement of her politically, but she, it's very hard not to smile when you're just having a conversation with her.
Yeah, she's the sort of politician who is just blessed with a natural ability to
yeah,
light
is.
Up the room. Yeah, very charismatic.
And by the way, as if you just tuned in also, one, I'm surprised he gave an interview to the Globe. Bill Bulger, who was probably the most celebrated host of this, in a phone interview said to the Globe, he got it when he was a state rep, and he said essentially then-Senator Moakley gave it to him. It's mostly because I was such a ham. Moakley said, you want to take this thing over? He went on to support Dorsina-Forey's thinking, saying, quote, it has always been the understanding that it was the state senator that was the host. And then Steve Lynch, who obviously was the next one in line, says, I believe the sitting state senator has always served as host. And as our new state senator, Linda should be the host. I'm happy to lend her my expertise and any assistance I can provide. Let's go to Dave. You're in Norwood. And we're obviously talking about St. Patrick's Day breakfast in South Boston with me and Adam Riley. Hey, Dave.
Hey, happy New Year, Jim. First of all, this event is the most overrated thing that there is in Boston.
Now you know that Jim is the host of it. Right?
Well, I have no, all I do, I'm the conduit. The, I'm sorry, let's yes. put it that
no,
way.
It's not you. It's the whole event. I mean, now when Billy Bulger was the host, there was a certain amount of entertainment value. But now it's just bad songs, bad puns. It's really turned into something. I hope that they try to exclude her and that people stop going and it withers and dies.
So that it wouldn't be a horrible thing in your mind if this was the impetus for the ending of this once celebrated event. Is that where you are, Dave?
Absolutely. If they want to have a private event, that's their business. If they want to exclude people because it is a private event like the parade, let them do it. But then don't go. And Jim, as a reporter, perhaps, yeah. isn't covering it either.
You know, by the way, let me begin. Two things. One, they are a private nonprofit organization. I know where you're going with this, Dave, but just for the record. And secondly, we also, I want to be as fair to Linehan as we can be in light of the fact that we just invited him this morning. Of course, we didn't know about it till this morning. He said, which is a little condescending from my perspective, but he did say, I'm willing to sit down with her. He says, I'm the host now, is his quote. But there could be a role for her in this thing. It doesn't cut it for me. But I think we have to be fair to Councilor Linehan, who could not be with us. Dave, thank you for the call.
Just to follow up on Dave's point, I first saw the breakfast when it was at the old Ironworkers Hall.
Which is where it was almost forever,
yeah.
right, until a few years ago.
And now it's at the Boston Convention Center. And I got to say,
Boston, yeah.
in terms of atmosphere, the convention center doesn't come anywhere close to conjuring
no.
up the sort of feel.
The fire trappy feel of the former
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it felt authentic, and it no longer feels authentic.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that, I mean, having been there, and there are roughly 1,000 people in the room, I think the 1,000 people, most of them are really into it, I should say. And two, if you're watching on television, I don't think it makes a hell of a lot of difference whether it's at the convention center.
True.
But in terms of the history and the feel of the event, I'm sure it's not the same as when it was in cramped corners and the Bulgers and people like that were hosting this
and
thing.
The other point I would make, I think it connects both with the observation that Sue made and with what Dave had to say. The South Boston that gave birth to this event, it's not totally gone, and this controversy is proof that it's not totally gone, but it's vanishing. And in, I think, one generation, two generations, it's not going to be there anymore. So in a way, I wonder if you have Linehan and Collins grasping to hold on to their control of this because they're feeling defensive. Sue mentioned, you know, the sort of the racial element. I'm just thinking in sort of class terms, development terms. Their world is vanishing. So in a way, playing armchair psychologist, it makes sense that they might grasp in kind of an unseemly way to maintain their control of one of the few traditions that they still have control of.
You know, when you say it may pass away, we should also say that, as is mentioned in the Globe story, Bill Linehan may pass away, not in terms of being on the planet, but on being the city councilor. And it may all be moot because Suzanne Lee, who ran against him last time, I think lost to him by 97 votes, is running again. So it's possible come March, he won't even be the sitting person, in which case Nick Collins says he is ready to take over as then the dean of the South Boston delegation.
In terms of Linehan's political future, David Bernstein, our colleague here at WGBH, made the point today in a blog post written for Boston Magazine that this could be Linehan looking to sort of mobilize his old-school South Boston voters by whipping up a controversy, or if not whipping it up, by getting it out into the pages of the Globe and making himself look like the savior of the old town.
Well, you know, by the way, since we were so critical of Bill Linehan, even though he was unavailable today, it was short notice, we didn't call him until we read the Globe this morning, we will reach out to him again, and if either he or Nick Collins would like to call in to clarify, defend, whatever their position in the days ahead, we will be more than happy to have him.
Well, when we come back, we'll get Kelly Crossley's take on this turf war. Kelly will also go over some of the stories that went under the radar this week. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
It's the first wide-open mayoral race in Boston in a generation, with a dozen candidates vying for the seat. I'm Emily Rooney. Next week, join WGBH News for a special mayoral forum each night at 7. We host three candidates a night until you've met them all and hear their plans for the future of the city. That's next week on Greater Boston on WGBH 2 and here on 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you and Bentley. The Mafra Trom Bead Project for at-risk children in Ghana is anything but typical. It's part of a social enterprise designed and implemented by a group of students from Bentley University. Bentley, the business university. And Celebrity Cruises, a proud sponsor of the WGBH Food and Wine Festival. You can embark on a culinary journey with up to 12 distinctive restaurants on board. Details at 1-800-CELEBRITY or your travel agent. Ships Registry, Malta.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. Marjorie has the day off. Adam Riley is sitting in. Kelly Crossley is host of Under the Radar with Kelly Crossley. She's here with us in Studio 3. Kelly, we're going to cover the full spectrum of tone today. I was thinking about this, from the ridiculous to the serious to the sublime, and you are the woman for the job.
All right. Okay.
Well, we'll see, actually, won't we, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
So, Kelly, what's your take on this whole South Boston breakfast, St. Patrick's Day breakfast brouhaha?
I just assumed that Linda Dorsina-Fore would be the host person, and that was that. And to have it be otherwise seems to me to be a little bit odd. That's where I'm going to leave it. And I'm surprised that there's so much energy spent in trying to make this one woman who, by tradition, should be the host, not be.
I was just going to say, don't just leave it there. Do you think it's a racial thing? Do you think it's a class thing, a neighborhood thing?
All of the above. Yes, of course. You get all of those threads working in Boston at any particular time. You know, what are you going to do, though? This to me, I suppose when we have when all those kinds of major confluences come together, it's because of something small like this or something that should be seemed as small. That's where you really get a chance to, you know, have people lay bare all of their stuff. But in this case, we have an opportunity as a city to say, come on. If this is an event that represents the city, even in a light and fun way and a traditional way, this is ridiculous. The woman is now the representative of the area. it's been traditional. She has an Irish husband, for God's sake. You know, she can't even play the Irish card here. Good God. It's crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, as small as it is in many ways, I think you would agree probably better than most, considering the work you've done throughout your life. It's often the smallest of moments that take on the greatest symbolism, because they're issues that everybody can understand. Some of these arcane debates we all get involved in are sort of so heady they give everybody a headache. This is pretty straightforward. Most people know the history of South Boston. Most people know there is a new South Boston in many, many ways. And most people know about St. Patrick's Day breakfast and have opinions about, oh my God, should we have it anymore anyway, apart from this issue. And my sense is, unless because of this Globe story, this thing is resolved really quickly, and the resolution has Linda Dorsina-Forey as the MC of the breakfast with Linehan as her number two or whatever it is, this thing's going to smolder a bit, and I think it's going to take on potentially huge implications in this mayor's race with the vote. Remember, the runoff is only 18 days from now.
It'll be like the parade all over again, right? Except for maybe even more important, because it's on right before
18 days before
Freeland.
A big vote. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, Adam addressed, I think you said earlier that there's a history here that, you know, is unpleasant for a lot of people. I'm still not comfortable going to South Boston when my dearest friends lives there. So
why?
What's the feel?
What do you think?
I've watched all the stories happen, all the people who are not from the area be hustled out, even in a calm or not calm way. Ugly incidents happening over there. That's my impression of the city. So I have pause when I go there.
Because
it's
you can't
not
escape
the same community.
Because
I understand
you can't
that.
Escape. Yeah. So I was going to say the history.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what
right.
it, that's
yeah.
what it is with you.
No, and I know that it's not the same community.
So is it? Yeah. And just to follow up on Jim's question, is it the memory of these things, or do you feel actual palpable discomfort when you're there?
It's the memory that causes me to feel actual
gotcha.
Palpable.
Okay,
discomfort.
Okay, well let me just not to belabor this point, but do you feel like do you catch people looking at you in what you feel is an unwelcoming way, or interacting with you in a way?
You know
that's
what? I can't even focus on what's happening because I'm so palpably
you're
uncomfortable.
You're in your head with, yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of uncomfortable, this guy who probably should feel uncomfortable because a pretty major moment in his presidency is probably a week away. Here's President Obama earlier this morning speaking in St. Petersburg in Russia.
This is not something we've fabricated. This is not something that we are looking, are using as an excuse for military action. As I said last night, I was elected to end wars, not start them.
You know, before we get back to this, what the president said today and the vote that's coming up next week, in the middle, as that sound was playing, City Councilor Mike Ross, who's one of the 12 candidates who is running for mayor of Boston, was kind enough to call in. None of them were invited, by the way, I should say, but Mike called in. So we thought we'd take him for a minute. Councilor Ross, you were on with Adam Riley, Jim Browdy, and Kelly Crossley. Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, how are
hey,
you?
Mike.
Good. What's your take on this thing?
Well, I was listening to you guys in the car, and I've been thinking a lot about it since last night, and I think there's no place for it in today's Boston. I was disappointed by the comments that I read from Bill Linehan and echoed by Nick Collins. And I just think that Linda would do a great job. We're a different city. We're a better city than I think the limitations that some are willing to put on us.
Have you spoken to Linehan since you read the article this morning, Mike Ross, your colleague?
No, I have not.
Do you intend to?
Yeah, I definitely will. I mean, we see each other. We're colleagues. She's someone that I've worked with and I work with, and someone that I agree with sometimes and sometimes I don't. And this is one of those issues that I don't agree with him. And, I think it rises to the level of pick up the phone and call you because you're talking about it. I was listening to you in the car, and I felt
what else would you be doing at 12 o'clock, Mike? Hey, Mike Ross, the man that you hope to succeed, we mentioned when we were talking to Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows a couple of minutes ago, not gone to the parade because of the issue around gays and lesbians. If you become the mayor of Boston and there's a breakfast and Linda Dorsina-Forey has not been allowed to be the host, would you go to it?
Well, I mean, let's first see if, you know, there's still an election between now and then where, you know, Bill Linehan is
well, let's
still
assume
running for
Linehan
office.
Is still, regardless, whether it's Linehan, Collins, if the state senator from South Boston, who represents South Boston, who you support in this context, I don't mean her candidacy, but her hosting of the breakfast, is not allowed to host the event and you're the next mayor, do you go?
Yeah, I mean, given what I'm telling you now, I'd be reluctant to go. We haven't had that you know, I haven't crossed that bridge yet. We'll cross that bridge. We'll make that determination at that point. But, I mean, I think, you know, this is an unfortunate opportunity. This is a great opportunity to celebrate, you know, our city, South Boston, Linda's election. And it's not to denigrate anyone. It's not to denigrate Nick or anyone else or South Boston or, you know, the people who even, you know, who came before. This is, to me, this is really the evolution of our city. I mean, this is who we are. We are this great melting pot. I mean, my father, Steve Ross, spent 40 years as a street worker in South Boston in D Street housing, a neighborhood that can embrace that man, you know, a Holocaust survivor, is a neighborhood that I know that can and will and has embraced Linda.
Hey, Councilor Ross.
I think we've come a long way.
Let me tell you that while people may dispute whether or not you're the best or not the best candidate for mayor, there's no disputing your taste in radio, I should say. Hey, Councilor Ross, good luck on the 24th. And we're sure we'll talk to you before. And thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That is Mike Ross, one of the members of the City Council, Bill Linehan, and a guy who is running for the mayor's race. I think proving the point that we all have mentioned, that this will have implications come runoff time on the 24th. So we just played Barack Obama speaking in St. Petersburg. Callie, all the counts, and again, they could change, but all the counts as of the morning on Politico and all those places say that if the vote were today, Barack Obama is about to lose maybe the biggest issue of his presidency. What's your take on the whole thing from Obama to Curry to the whole Syria deal?
I think it's sad and very scary. And what I'm struck with, I'm just driving down the street or walking or whatever, and then it dawns on me, oh, my God, we could be sending all kinds of artillery into this country. And where they have already, whether or not there's been absolute proof by the UN, we have seen some of the pictures, chemically gassed children. And I'm going about my life like nothing's going on. And, you know, a huge decision is about to be made. So that's the overriding thing that I have, that I mean, I know that a lot of people are talking about it, but it doesn't feel like it's, you know, into the fabric of our being here right now just yet about the enormity of the decision one way or the other. Then the second part of it is that, you know, if you're going to say you're going to get out there and do it, get out there and do it. President Obama, I don't think he has a choice now. I think
the nation. He announced in Russia he's going to address the nation Tuesday night, which makes it an even a higher stakes thing for
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. I understand all that. And I know why he wanted to get congressional support. Everybody should be in if you're going to do it. But if you don't have everybody in, I can't even imagine the ramifications of that. I'm not even talking about politically. I just mean in the rest of the world, how that's viewed. And that, to me, is what's very important.
You know, a question I've had as this has simmered is you see the images of the apparent gas attack in Syria, and they're horrible. But we've seen a lot of other horrible images coming out of Syria involving not chemical weapons, but involving just, you know, lethal artillery.
And the killing of 100,000 people prior to
exactly.
this chemical assault.
So here's what I wonder. I think that this goes back to World War I and the way that everyone was taken aback by these, you know, new forms of weaponry that you know, like put mustard gas in the trenches, that kind of thing. And people just thought this is barbaric and inhumane. We can't let that happen again. But I remain a little bit confused about why the red line would be 1,500 people being killed by poison gas as opposed to 100,000 people being killed with heavy artillery.
Because poison gas, I think, just takes it up another notch.
But how so? It's killed less
people. I will tell you how so. Because when you start talking about children and death in the same sentence, and
children
I understand
are
that.
Already
I got
though.
That. But that was the leading edge of this conversation coming out of the chemical gas situation.
Well, Marjorie said yesterday, and I asked the same question you did, the gas is indiscriminate in terms of who it gets. And while surely no one is defending, other than Assad himself maybe, and maybe Putin, the killing of 100,000 of his own people, I guess the theory is twofold. One, that it's more targeted, which I know sounds weird to say. And two, there are rules of war, which sounds even weirder to say.
Yes.
It's okay if you kill your people or kill other people's, even if it's a venal motive, as long as you do it with certain kinds of weapons.
Right, you're firing mortars
you
in
here,
an apartment building,
right.
And
you know,
it's okay.
Kelly,
but
the one I love what you just said, but there's one caveat. One of the things that has driven me nuts is how in these wars in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, we've had no skin in the game, to use an expression everybody has. It's not only did we not pay a war tax, our taxes were cut. The vast majority of people don't have a relative or someone they love mm-hmm. who, when they go to bed every night, they're worried if he or she is going to wake up breathing again the next day. The only good, even though I think he was late to do it, about this going to Congress is finally there's a national debate. I mean, it's just beginning. I agree with you. I don't know if you've seen the video of people standing up John McCain in his own district
and
at a town
feisty.
Hall meeting yesterday.
Yeah.
But the point is, that's what, when you go to war, it shouldn't just be the 535 people, most of whom are hiding out during these discussions but can't anymore. But it's when the American people begin to get engaged, which I think they're beginning to do, that's the only time you should ever consider doing anything like this.
And if I can add something, just to say that I don't know that a lot of people really heard the war piece at the beginning. You see, you know, let's go strike a few people.
Yeah,
it's no boots
right.
on the ground. Right. We're striking some people. We're going on about our business. It's Wednesday. That's it. But now when you start saying, okay, Congress, I'm talking about going to war. War is really what we're talking about. Then those people at those town hall meetings locked in and said, wait a minute. We've been lied to before about some other things. We're not certain what's going on here. To your point, Adam, what makes this, at this moment, something we should respond to? And then, but I also hear a lot of pain from people saying, I don't want to be the person that looks away when this is happening. And we as a country have the power to do something. But I also don't want to be drawn in because if they're like me, you cannot convince me there will be no boots on the ground.
Well, I agree with that, even though neither of us are military experts.
Yeah.
But then on the other side of the equation is you have Bill Clinton at that what he thought was a no press event the other day, saying the president is either a wuss or a fool if public polls cause him to not do what he thinks is the right thing to do in Syria. So despite the fact the most recent poll I saw, one, I think it was CNN, had 58% opposed it, another one, 46-29 opposed action. It doesn't appear to me that if the president is able to get the congressional vote, that popular objection, assuming he can't turn them around with Tuesday night speech, is going to stop.
You know, though,
let me add one thing. In those polls, the Washington Post, black people, his highest supporters, his most loyal, 68% no.
Well, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus, the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus has asked the members of the Congressional Black Caucus to say nothing. And my interpretation of that is the fear is that they overwhelmingly are going to follow the lead of black voters and say, I'm sorry, President Obama, we're not with you on this.
I just want to say that comment by Bill Clinton strikes me as awfully glib. You know, Clinton, his big military adventure was bombing Kosovo when the Serbians were kind of running amok in Kosovo and bringing resolution to that situation. That worked out okay for his administration. Obama is making this call on the heels of a voluntary war in Iraq, on the heels of this long and I think fairly fruitless engagement in Afghanistan, and on the heels of pushback about our use of drones to try to take out terrorists around the Middle East, and you know, which has resulted, I think we all know now, in plenty of collateral damage. So, you know, Clinton,
a lot of glib remarks now because, you know, nobody knows all the stuff that is known by the guy sitting in the seat whose seat I would never want to have. But we still, as citizens of this country, have to tell him something about how we feel
about it. Oh, I'm just saying,
I think
that remark by Clinton indicates a lack of contemplation on his part. Doesn't sound to me like he's done too much hard thinking on this.
This is the transitions today are very hard to make, but we're going to make them anyway. Yeah. You were a little perturbed by the fact that Fast Company, for those who don't know, Fast Company is a magazine that deals with business, technology, that sort of thing, came up with, what was their list of 25 people?
25 smart women on smartest women on Twitter.
Well, there were a lot of women on there. Christian Amanpour is a smart woman.
Yeah,
Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah.
You don't like smart women? Is that your problem?
No, that's not my problem.
What's your problem?
Is, once again, these lists are so a shocking lack of diversity in 2013. And in an arena that we still, some of us, call new media, which is supposed to be the leading edge of the 21st century of communication and therefore more global in its perspective and certainly inclusion and diversity ought to be one or two of the values thereof. Now, to Fast Company's credit, after they got just slashed and burned, really, Fast Company? This is what you do? They answered and said, you know, we posted this list. We asked readers to respond, and they said, let's just say the response was heard loud and clear. And they went on to say, here's what you can learn from an engaged audience. And so then they went on to, of course, add names of people who should have been on the list from in the beginning, and agree that it was very short-sighted. But what's interesting in this discussion, I think, is that this was the product of one of their contributors. And to their eye, because who's in the room with them when they're looking at these things, it looked seemed fine. And to her eye, it seemed fine, because let's go back to our conversation weeks ago about whose friends are whose and how your circle is either in, expansive or not. And lots of folks just don't go outside of their racial circle. So there you have it. And she did that. And that's, there's nothing wrong with the people she picked, by the way. They're very smart. But there's some also some other smart people.
I can't tell a lie. I went to the list of 25. You said nothing wrong with the people I picked. They're very smart. Of the 25, I may be humiliated when I say this, I only heard of five of them before I had seen their names and read their bios. And I knew what some of them did, but I didn't know what they were. So they've corrected their faults. You're very generous in your... in your whatever there at the end, saying they're acknowledging their errors and whatever. Now, Under the Radar is what they call this thing on Sunday night. Under the Radar with Kelly Crossley, to be precise. What are you doing under the radar on Sunday night, Kelly?
Well, one of our contributors, our regular contributors, Marcella Garcia, has noted Caesar Entertainment's not-so-secret now strategy, but it is to the wider community to some degree. They focused in on East Boston, which, as you know, is in a battle to try to get this Suffolk Downs casino license, and it's all about, you know, city approval or area citizen approval. And they figured out, wouldn't take much if you paid attention, that 53% of the neighborhood of East Boston is Latino.
I was shocked when I read this. Yeah. I really was shocked. I had no idea.
And so they said, hey, why don't we do a little campaign to appeal? Well, they decided not enough to just, you know, throw out a Spanish language ad or blah, blah, blah. They did a very smart thing. And to quote Marcella's piece, and rather than launch a flashy media blitz, Caesar smartly prefers that people in the community do the convincing. Latino on Latino, street by street. It's a ground game. It's very clever. They're talking to people and people are like, oh, hey, this is kind of interesting. What's in the deal? What are you going to bring to the community? And so I think it's very smart. You can consider it a smart, cynical, however you want to consider it. But there are people that, as her piece makes clear, really weren't paying attention to the details of what could possibly be in a proposed casino in the area. And now they're hearing it in very great detail and personally.
You know what? That's sort of the hot thing right now in Massachusetts politics is a focus on grassroots organizing, on working on, you know, ground level activism as opposed to, you know, big media buys and that sort of thing. Think back on how Governor Patrick won re-election, Elizabeth Warren, how she was elected to the Senate in the mayor's race.
Well, they both had millions of dollars on TV. I'm not saying that the ground game didn't matter, but it wasn't like they were poor candidates.
Very true. Paul McMorrow had a great piece in the current Commonwealth magazine about, you know, again, grassroots organizing in the mayoral race. And I say all this to note that Doug Rubin, who was Governor Patrick's chief strategist, also the strategist
about whom you wrote
Elizabeth
a huge
Warren,
piece in Boston Magazine
recently, yes, he also happens to be a consultant for Suffolk Downs. And it would not surprise me if he is imparting some of the political ethos that he's used to win elections recently into this fight over the casino.
And Felix Arroyo, who, by the way, is noted for his door knocking.
Consultant. That's right. That's right.
So,
okay, now, Kelly, ordinarily after we ask you what's under the radar, we say goodbye. Not today. I have to say, one of the criticisms that's occasionally leveled at me, which I plead guilty to, is I don't do follow-up all the time when I say, well, no one can ever say this about Kelly Crossley. Yesterday, Marjorie and I had John McGuire on the phone. John is a local guy from Massachusetts who's the 46-year-old, relatively new CEO of Friendly's. And here, do I have to set this up by saying what Callie's call was, or does he? Well, I think I do. Do I not? Yeah, here's what happened. In the middle of the show, Callie called one of the producers, and he was talking about all the new things. And Callie asked the question that was voiced through me, what about onion strings? Shouldn't we have onion strings instead of just onion rings? And here's what McGuire had to say.
Here's what I tell Callie. You can get onion strings at Friendly's. They're called Frunions. You can have them not only put on a burger, but you could replace your French fries with Frunions, or you could get them as a standalone. So those are the onion strings. She can get them today if she goes there.
Okay, now, I would have assumed, I'm the kind of person who said if John McGuire says they're onion strings there, I would say they're onion strings and go about my business. Not you, Kelly Crossley. What happened seconds after McGuire issued the challenge?
Sadly, I'm a marketer's dream. And so
what'd you do?
I drove right to Friendly's, my Friendly's in Watertown, and I ordered up some lunch. I was hungry, so it was good timing at the same time. And I, you know, ordered what I ordered came with French fries. And I said to the waiter, but I would like onion strings. I want the Funyuns. May I have them instead of the French fries?
And before you answer, were you thinking he may say, sorry, we don't have Funyuns?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that on the menu, the Funyuns are only listed as part of another meal. So they're not listed even in the sides. So I said, well, and then I was all disappointed. And I said, wait a minute. I'm a reporter. I can ask the question anyway.
And you did, boldly.
And I did, boldly.
What did he say?
He said, of course you may. And he said, now it's 95% extra. Do you mind that? I said, no, I
95
don't.
95 cents extra, 95, not percent.
Yeah, that's right. 95 cents
and
extra.
And you went for the buck?
I went for the buck, and they brought me, and it's lovely. You know, it's all redone and updated, so it comes in a lovely new container, and it's a whole lot of them, and they're very crispy, and they're onion strings.
What kind of batter is it? Is it like the
it's a light batter.
Okay, so not the mealy batter that you get on some onion rings?
No, it's very good.
Cool.
So she goes, let's recap here. She calls in, questions the absence of onion strings.
Questions the CEO.
The CEO says, sorry, we do have onion strings, Callie. And she, investigative reporter that she is, goes, checks them out and gives it a thumbs up. I think John McGuire is going to be a happy man this morning.
There you go.
Hey, Callie, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Boston College Eagles are inadvertently giving the Washington Redskins some relief in the realm of public relations and political correctness. That conversation is next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
A college diploma is still the key to getting ahead. Yet paying for college education is more challenging than ever.
Coming up with $600 extra is just another struggle. It makes it hard because you lose focus when it comes to education when you have to come up to pay the bills.
Voices of students and administrators, faculty and staff from WGBH's Higher Ed Desk on campus on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you and the Castle Group, PR, digital media, and events partner to businesses that value local connections, international reach, and marketing intelligence, connecting Castle clients with their audiences for 17 years, thecastlegrp.com. And Audi, featuring the new 2013 Audi A8 TDI clean diesel model with engineering, technology, and craftsmanship. You can learn more about the A8 and 5 new Audi TDI clean diesel models at newenglandaudidealers.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy sitting in for Marge Regan. At least for this hour is Adam Riley from GBH as well. You know, usually when it comes to football and political correctness, the Washington Redskins are at the center of controversy. Well, now Boston College has stolen the spotlight. The BC Eagles, or if you excuse the expression, ruffling PETA's feathers. BC is resurrecting a tradition that's been on hiatus for decades, using a real bald eagle at their home games as a mascot. The bird will be present at every game, as I said, showcased on the arm of a bird handler. It will also be available for photos and appearances before and after the games. PETA says this is animal abuse. Joining us to clarify if this is abusive to the bird or not is a neutral party, Vern Lux. Vern is the senior naturalist for the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket. He writes a weekly birding column for the Cape Cod Times. He's a contributor to our sister stations, WCAI and WNAN. Welcome, Vern Lux. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to be here. How you doing?
We're excellent.
Hey,
thank
Vern.
You, Vern.
It's a beautiful day. I happen to love football.
You do?
And I love birds of prey.
Well, Vern, let me ask you at the outset. In Boston Magazine's write-up of this controversy, they quoted BC's director of athletics, Brad Bates, offering sort of a highbrow explanation of why the use of the live bald eagle would be advantageous. And I just want to read a part of what Bates had to say. We are fortunate to have a majestic and imposing mascot, and showcasing an eagle in ways that are inspiring and educational will provide an exceptional opportunity for our fans. So the idea seems to be, and this was echoed by John Linehan, the president and CEO of Zoo New England, that the eagle was going to be an educational tool. And as these people gathered to watch football, it will raise their awareness of, you know, the challenges faced by soon-to-be-extinct birds of prey. Is there any chance at all that that's going to happen, or isn't really everyone going to be, you know, in their cups and or focused on the football game?
Well, you've been to a BC football game, I imagine.
No, I'm going to confess, I'm not a big Eagles guy.
Oh, okay.
So,
I would probably disagree with his statement that it's going to be educational because it's, you know, there's quite a throng. I don't know what the stadium holds. I think it's like 50,000 people, and they're there for the game. However, I'm bald eagles and the protections they enjoy are, I have no problem with the use of the birds. The bird that they're talking about using from the zoo is a 9-year-old bald eagle that is used in programs pretty much daily out there. I don't think birds of prey, especially bald eagles, they were taken off the endangered species list in August of 2007. At one time, there were less than 400 in all of the continental United States. Their numbers today are over 10,000 in the lower 48. And, of course, their stronghold has always been Alaska and southeast Alaska, where there's some 70 to 80,000 bald eagles. They were never in trouble there. The reason they got in trouble here was, it's always man. It was our pesticides we used, persistent DDT, habitat destruction, and they got to the point, because they're at the top of the food chain, eating lots of fish, they actually eat carrion and stuff, that they concentrated the poisons. The females would sit on the eggshells and they'd break. And remarkably enough, falconers and zoos play a really important role in bringing back endangered birds of prey. They've learned how to breed them in captivity. And in fact, peregrine falcons and bald eagles have both benefited greatly from the expertise of keeping some in captivity. Generally, the birds, now it's illegal for anyone to catch an eagle or do anything like that. And this bird that's going to be used, I understand, at the games, which I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's really educational. It might fire up some of the Eagles fans some more, but I don't believe it'd be bad for the birds. They're going to be taking it. They're not going to fly it. It's either going to sit on somebody's wrist or on a perch there. And I can see the PR data, but I don't, you know, I guess I'm not pro or con, really, using the eagle.
Hey, but Vern Lux, I haven't spent much time with bald eagles, I must admit, so you know an awful lot more than I. But when I read the arguments from PETA, which more often than not for me are a little bit extreme, this one doesn't sound that extreme to me at all. It's there, as you say, whatever, tens of thousands of people screaming, wild sound, all this sort of stuff. Even though this is a zoo or whatever, I guess it's a zoo bald eagle, that environment has got to be, I mean, it would be pretty shocking to me as an individual if I was sitting on somebody's wrist at the game. But to an eagle, it's not used to this. It's got to be pretty jarring, no?
I would agree with you 100%.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I did a pretty good job convincing
nice job,
him
Jim.
Right there.
Well, I mean, I don't think, but these birds of prey are not like any, you they are incredibly focused. They don't really sound is not what they do. Their eyesight is like 15 times better than ours. And these birds have been raised in captivity. It's not, the eagle might actually enjoy going to the stadium and eyeballing all the people around there. It might be fun for the eagle. This, you know, that's the other side of it.
Well, how would one detect? That's a good question, Vern Lux. If you were at, let's assume you were standing near this eagle at Mascot, the first home. I don't know if they've had a home game already, but I know they played one game. But let's assume that the first home game is coming. How do you assess whether a bald eagle is having a good time or not at a particular? I mean, could you look at it and know, hey, that eagle is really enjoying this particular thing or not? How do you know that?
I'm afraid there is no way to determine that. I have done a lot of hawk watching in a lot of places, and the best way to see hawks is to have a falconer's bird or a bird that's being rehabbed that's injured on a perch next to you, whether it's an eagle or a red tail or whatever, because the birds are looking skyward, and they're up, and they focus. They actually point out to you all the different birds going over that you wouldn't see. So I don't know how you determine if the bird's happy or not.
So if the bird is agitated, it won't make any sort of noises of distress or anything like that?
I know. Well, eagles, especially bald eagles, are remarkably calm. Hmm. They are just like in another. They're in a whole different zone. They don't seem to freak out ever, except when another eagle is like invading their territory. They're actually very easy to handle and stuff.
Hey, can we step back?
They're different than other birds.
Vern Lux, how about using birds for, I mean, they mentioned in the story here, they mentioned there was a problem with a condor out there in Bakersfield at some minor league hockey team, the Bakersfield Condors.
I read that.
And apparently that one did get pretty upset about what was going on. It was a dangerous, stressful situation. It was a mess or something because it was flying around the rink or some such thing. I mean, so is this like a breed-by-breed kind of thing as to whether or not these do you call a bird an animal or you don't? Is it an animal?
It's an animal.
Okay. Is it a breed-by-breed thing as to whether or not the particular animal can handle this kind of environment?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, California condor is the largest flying bird and one of the largest flying birds in the world.
I didn't know that.
What could go wrong?
I mean, the wingspan on some of them is over 12 feet long, and they're vultures. They eat dead stuff. They have a whole different temperament. In fact, condors are no longer, they trapped all the California condors. When I was a younger man, I wanted to see them in the wild, and there were only eight left, and I finally found them in a little town called Grapevine, California, right before they trapped the rest of them into captivity, and then there weren't any wild ones for almost 20 years.
How many are there now?
Well, it's like a captive breeding program, and I believe there's over 120 out in near the Grand Canyon and in different places. But the big problem with condors, because they're this giant vulture, is they eat dead stuff, and everything they're eating has been injured animals of one type or another that have been shot with a lead shot, not steel shot. And the National Rifle Association, anyway, they get lead poisoning when they eat the dead animals. And the lead shot, it looks like they'll never be able to re-release them into the wild without all sorts of help. And it's a bird that's not, its future certainly does not look very rosy right now.
We're talking to Vern Lux. He's a senior naturalist for the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket. He's a contributor to our sister stations, WCAI and WNAN. And by the way, we're only going to spend a few more minutes on this, but if you have a question for Vern, or if you have a point of view, particularly if you are an eagle or a double eagle or a triple eagle, if you're an alum and want to weigh in on this live eagle mascot on the sidelines of home games for the football team, give us a buzz, 877-301-8970.
So what I kind of worry about in this situation is some sort of a wacky fraternity stunt gone wrong where some drunk frat boys decide that they want to kidnap the eagle and, you know, paint it gold or cover it with marshmallow fluff or something and, you know, release it in the president's
office. You'd be against that, Vern, correct?
Oh, well, you weren't kidding.
I mean,
I would have the death penalty for those guys. That would be horrible.
Hey, you know, Vern, speaking of assuming those things won't happen, I hope they're going to protect. When you mentioned a minute ago, I didn't realize, one, that the bald eagle had been taken off the endangered species list, nor did I realize it had had the kind of comeback you described.
Right.
What was that a function of? I mean, what program, what behavior caused this huge turnaround?
Well, when they finally enjoyed, people used to shoot eagles routinely until right after World War II, they finally enacted some more legislation and started enforcing it. And then when all the eggshells were breaking, when DDT was in widespread early 60s, they just went down. They were just like getting wiped out. They were just really so a bunch of people got together and said, you know, let's protect our national emblem. Let's protect these magnificent birds. And they enacted all sorts of legislation protecting them, and over the ensuing 40 years, the bald eagle numbers in the continental U.S. went from under 400 to over 10,000.
That's pretty incredible.
They're doing great in Massachusetts, by the way. They are breeding, I think there were 18 or 20 nests this year in Massachusetts. They nest at Quabbin Reservoir. They nest up on the Merrimack River. The southeast, there's one in Lakeville. And they're increasing every year. I expect them to start nesting on Cape Cod in a few years.
Hey, let's take a call or two for Vern Lux in the next few minutes. Matt, you're in a car, and apparently you're a BC alum. Welcome to Boston Public Radio.
Hi, this is Matt.
Hi, Matt. Welcome. Go.
Hi, how you doing? I'm a 1983 grad at Boston College.
Okay.
And as I was telling your producer just now, I was part of a group back in 83 that tried to do the same thing. Was called the Eagle Foundation of Boston College back then.
You mean bring a live eagle back as a mascot?
Exactly.
What happened?
We were working with the Stone Zoo at the time.
Oh.
And BC, and what we found out was BC used to have a live eagle.
Yes, they did.
Her name was Margot, and she lived in a cage, actually, behind Alumni Hall.
She was there from, according to the Boston Magazine story, she was there from 61 to 66, Matt.
Right. And it wasn't the greatest of situations because I don't think they were really equipped to take care of her.
I think there's a picture on the Boston Magazine story. There's this heartrending picture of a bird with a rope around its leg.
Yeah, it's pretty
something.
Bad.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I think that kind of informed what we were looking to do. The goal of what we had been looking to do, which, and I haven't read the Boston Magazine article, but the goal of what we were looking to do was to have a mascot that could go to the games and pretty much, you know, sit on somebody's shoulder, but also use that as an opportunity to, at the time, the Stone Zoo was looking to expand their area exhibit and to work with them to try to do almost educational types of things where you'd have people be involved in a program where it would help them learn about the bald eagles and actually help in preserving.
So why didn't you succeed, Matt? It sounds pretty noble. Why didn't it happen?
Money.
Oh, money. Well, that often is the root of all problems.
That's what it is. There was a bunch of college students looking to do it. We were mostly seniors at the time. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you look in the 1982 yearbook, there's a whole section on it. The university was very supportive. The Stone Zoo was very supportive.
It took 31 years after your efforts, Matt, but apparently it's come to fruition. So I guess congratulations after the fact. Matt, thanks for the call. One more quick call, because this guy from Alabama actually has some experience that's relevant. Tom, welcome to Boston Public Radio. Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Hey,
what's going on?
Hey, Auburn University down in Auburn, Alabama, they have an eagle that they turn loose at the beginning of every home game. He lands on the 50-yard line.
They turn it loose and it lands on the 50-yard line?
He lands on the 50-yard line and lands on a guy's, his trainer's hand. And he flies around the stadium about twice before he lands. And I had my grandson down there a year ago, and we were sitting up top. It'd be 84,000 to 85,000 fans at the home game. And they have never had a problem with that eagle.
How about that, Vern Lux? Are you surprised by that? What do you think about it flying free and then landing on the hand of the handler?
Yeah, that's the falconer. That's a falconer's bird. That he spends more time with that bird than it's having a falcon or having a hawk is a huge commitment. And that bird is very well looked after, and he's trained. And that eagle will get out and fly around the stadium, but all the time he's waiting for the lure that the falconer has to put out. He throws the lure out, and the thing. He could be on the 20-yard line. It doesn't matter. Wherever he is with that lure, the bird will come right back to it.
So, Vern,
hey, Tom, thanks for the call.
That's exciting, yeah.
Just a quick question about Tom's story, Vern. If the eagle at Auburn were in distress, would it just take off and leave the stadium and keep on flying? I mean, would it still come back to its handler if it was agitated?
No. Oftentimes, falconry is a symbiotic relationship between the falconer and the bird of prey, and often they do take off.
Hey, Vern.
In other words, if the bird's flying, it doesn't feel like coming back. Guess what? He's not coming back.
Huh. Hey, Vern Lux, before you go away, I've never spoken to a birder in my life who didn't sound happy. Are all birders as happy as you are? Really?
Well, I wish that were true for most birders. Some birders are kind of sour. I don't know why.
Well, you sure is. You know what? Hey, Vern Lux, we really appreciate your time. He's a senior naturalist for the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket. He's a contributor to our sister stations, WCAI, WNAN, and he writes a birding column for the Cape Cod Times. Vern, thank you
much
for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. Bye.
See ya.
Well, when we come back, it's time for Open Mic with Emily Rooney. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Marco Werman. We're tackling all aspects of the potential military strike against Syria, from the debate at home.
There's a large number of anti-war progressives, Democrats who are liberals, didn't vote for Iraq, won't vote for this.
To opinion abroad.
This is one of the most polarized issues dividing the opinion of our Arabic audience.
Our Syria coverage continues next time on The World.
This afternoon at 3 here on WGBH Radio.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and Lahey Health, committed to providing leading-edge care right in your community, helping you become and stay healthy.
all through your life. You can learn more at LeahyHealth.org. That's LeahyHealth.org. And Ferguson Bath, Kitchen, and Lighting Gallery, featuring the latest for your kitchen and bath, including KitchenAid appliances offering designs to complement all lifestyles. Locations at Ferguson.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Here with us in studio. Oh, I should say, Adam Reilly was kind enough to co-host the first hour. He had to move on to do other work. Callie Crossley, I saw you recently somewhere. I was eating Funyuns somewhere.
Funyuns,
I'm not sure.
That's a great segment.
Yes. It was. Callie Crossley is co-hosting, sitting in for Marjorie. He'll be back on Monday. But in the interim, after a two-week absence, it was very painful for the hosts of this show. Emily Rooney has returned. She joins us every Friday at 1 o'clock. Hello there, Emily.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Callie.
Hey.
So can we talk about we talked Siri a little bit with Callie, but we thought we'd focus for a few minutes on the three major players from Massachusetts here, Curry, Markey, and Warren. Let's do the easiest one first. What did you think of Ed Markey's vote the other day?
Wimpy.
And?
I
how do you explain it?
I don't think he did explain it well. He's a newly elected senator. And not to say – he should have said something. I don't – even if it was something along the lines of what Elizabeth Warren said, which was a little bit weak as well. But it was, I don't feel like I'm well informed enough. I plan to get myself up to speed. And when the time comes and the actual vote comes in the Senate, I will be prepared. But to say present, he must have thought about that. And he was slumped down in the chair and it was – I thought it was ineffective.
He wasn't ready to say anything. I mean, that's what the bottom line was. But, you know, I think if he had to do it again, he wouldn't do that.
No.
I think he'd make a statement.
Yeah, but how can I'm sure he would. And he has said, in fairness to him, he said that obviously when the thing comes to a vote on the full floor probably next week.
Then.
Well, he did say that, but he didn't say it, I don't think, terribly emphatically. And the problem I have with this is twofold. One, part of the campaign selling point was I'm going to hit the ground running. I've been here 36 years. That's number one. Number two, we spoke to Mike Capuano yesterday morning. I know you spoke to him last night on your show. We asked him what he saw in those classified documents that we haven't seen. He said, not much. He says, you know, you don't get names of the who's in the cables that you're being told about. So the classified data that he allegedly has to go through more deeply doesn't enlighten one more than what was public. Enlightened ones, and 17 of his colleagues were perfectly able to vote.
Well, that wasn't why he said that, though.
What do you mean?
That's not why he said that. Well,
because he had to read more? What did he say?
No, I mean, what it meant was that I need to take some more time to think about where I stand. That's what it
And meant. Don't you think it's a little bit of a slap of his the guys he succeeded, John Kerry? Basically, he's saying the Secretary of State didn't give me enough information to make a decision.
It was insulting. I thought, by the way, Michael Capuano, I don't know if he's on your list of the three, but really acquitted himself brilliantly. I mean, he had a list of 7 or 8 questions, which he admits may never be adequately answered, but he wants them raised, and he wants some assurances of that, including whether Iran is going to go out and get itself a nuclear weapon. Well, Kerry didn't bring that up. So he had these 8 or 9 or beyond questions like that that he really wanted to delve into. And he hasn't voted yet, and he wasn't part of that special committee, but I think he would have said more along those lines.
Speaking of John Kerry, his predecessor, obviously Ed Markey's predecessor, he was the chief salesman on this thing as Secretary of State. Here he is claiming that samples from Syria have tested positive for signatures of sarin. In a second.
We'll get to it. 24 hours, we have learned through samples that were provided to the United States and that have now been tested from first responders in East Damascus, and hair samples and blood samples have tested positive for signatures of sarin.
How's he acquitted himself? I mean, there are a lot of people saying this is a guy who was anti-war when he was 27 years old. He mentioned his testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when he was 27. Many of us, I am amongst them, think he voted for the Iraq War because Bob Schrum, his advisor, said you can't be elected president, even though you're against the Iraq War, if you don't vote for it. With that background, has he been an effective leader for the president on this?
I thought he was brilliant. He was more impassioned. He was more urgent than the president has been any step along the line. He was more heartfelt. He was more humanitarian. He kept conjuring up those images of the dead children and the father picking up the limp body of his child. He was calling on the collective conscience of the United States of America and saying, you know, we cannot condone this. This is an act of war against its own citizenry. He compared Assad to Hitler and to Saddam Hussein, saying these are the only other leaders in a so-called civilized world that have ever dared to use gas on their own citizenry, whether he was effective enough in terms of reaching out to the congressional delegations that need to vote on this, I don't know. But I thought he made as impassioned and as articulate and as compelling an argument as could have been made.
What I think is interesting is that he's always the one that's been given the whole bash on the head for being kind of cold and aloof. And unless he's an awfully good actor, what comes across here is not just the words that he's saying and his reference to the documentation that he feels is very strong to get to make his point, but also his emotion, his, you know, I'm feeling from him, people, this is serious. And what are we going to do? How do we look ourselves in the mirror if we don't do anything? And I'm not saying that's the answer for everybody. I'm just saying that's what came across so strongly for me that I resonated with. And I thought, wow.
Yeah. And keep in mind, during the 90s and most of the 2000s, he was the one who said, we must negotiate. We must make concessions. We must, you know, reach across the borders to our, you know, to people in Syria, especially in Syria.
He and Theresa Hines had dinner with the Assads as recently as two or three years ago.
He was not a friend, but he wanted to make them. He was trying. It was a détente. He was trying to make them, you know,
a cordial relationship.
Yes. So for him to turn like this is pretty amazing.
Well, you know, you mentioned something that was also quite interesting. Friday, I think it was Friday of the day, right, was his speech from the State Department. And it was immediately, I didn't know, I don't know if you knew, that the president was going to speak from the, I guess, the cabinet room or something. You had Kerry, who you rarely do see with emotion, who was impassioned. And then you return to the man who's called No Drama Obama. And ordinarily, that works fine for me. But the contrast between this sort of electric Kerry, which you didn't expect, and then Barack Obama talking about the kind of dramatic thing you mentioned a half hour ago, Kelly, it made Kerry's thing look even more
urgent,
hot and urgent,
absolutely,
and that sort of thing. Well, can we go from the world stage to a local stage? We talked about this earlier in the day. The front page story in the Boston Globe today is about the fact that Linda Dorsina Forey, whom we all thought when she was elected to be the state senator to include South Boston, would be the next MC of the St. Patrick's Day breakfast, and obviously the first non-Irish American guy to be head of it. She's Haitian American from Dorchester. Apparently, some people, including last year's host, City Councilor Bill Linehan, say that ain't happening. What was your take on the story?
It's just a profound embarrassment. And as I think we all three in this room might agree, it is time to take this breakfast out behind the barn and put one between the eyes. It's over. Done. And this idea that somehow Linda Dorsina Forey, who, as you pointed out, married to an Irishman, you know, they print the Dorchester Reporter in Dorchester. I mean, and then she's the senator from, but it's just, and if she were white, would she be afforded this opportunity? My guess is yes.
Even if she lived in Dorchester.
Yes, this is disgusting. And it hardly even, it's so demeaning, it's hardly worthy of this discussion.
I mean, well, speaking of worthy, I mean, it's interesting. One of the reasons I was dying to talk to you about this is starting Monday night, you're going to do a series of hour-long debates. I said to Adam, and I also said to Callie earlier today, and Mike Ross, by the way, city councilor kind of just called in. It seems to me it's a small venue, but it's a big deal,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. I'll ask about it. Well, I'm so thick into this, by the way. I've had my head into all this mayoral stuff, but all these kinds of things bubble to the surface. And this is just a quick hit. What do you think? Should Linda Dorsina Forey be the head of the breakfast, or should it be, or is it time to end it? You
know, there's a follow-up question, too. And while Mike Ross, when he called in, and again, we didn't invite any of the city councilors, so I don't want to think that we ignored the others. Mike said in a second he had a real problem with this. We also said if you're elected mayor and Linehan is reelected as a city councilor and Linehan is the chair,
would
you go? Yeah. And he ultimately said he didn't think so.
Yeah, he did.
But that's a pretty bold step.
But he also said it was a bridge he hadn't had to cross.
Yes, right.
So which gives him some wiggle room. I just want to point out that this comes up, small things, as you've said, that can blow up into big things and mean big things, and we shouldn't even have to be talking about this, right before two forums, mayoral forums, that are focused on diversity and inclusion and on issues related to communities of color. I think it's interesting.
You did address one of those things on last night's show, right? What was the piece that you were talking about?
What do you mean?
What piece did you talk about?
Oh, we talked about two things. We talked about whether there should be a forum that is for minority candidates only, and the issue over whether there should be a squeeze to promote just one candidate of color so that that person has a better opportunity to become.
And ask the also-rans who are people of color to drop out so that those votes aren't
split.
No
one thought that was a good idea on the panel I had last night. But
how about the issue of the forum? Is that still? I don't even know. Is it still happening?
It's still happening. They said they're even going to have it outside, and people were fairly impassioned. But I had Jamal Crawford on, who passionately defended it. Tom Keene, who just said it was wrongheaded and wacko. The organizer of the event, this Maggie Brown, says it's that this idea has been tarnished by sort of this press focus on the fact that she says, listen, all the candidates are invited. They just can't all be on the podium. Well, that's ridiculous.
What's your take on this, Kelly Crossley?
Well, as a matter of fact, this is the subject of my commentary for Monday. So
can you give us a
hint?
Let me
undercut myself to say, really, the organizers of the forum limiting the candidates were really not so much focused on the skin color of the candidates as they are about holding candidates that they believe have a lived empathy accountable for their issues, saying, you, of all people, be accountable to us. Do not get to City Hall and ignore us. So I'm sorry that, you know, the way that it was presented came off. But that was the goal and the purpose.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Now, having said that, you know, I'm all about, and, you know, Emily has disagreed with me, I think everybody who gets the signatures ought to be on the stage at all times.
You disagree with that?
Oh, I have disagreed.
Yeah. Wait, you disagree with that in terms of this forum? I didn't know
where
you
were. Oh, no, not the forum. Oh, yeah, actually, I do. I don't think Wyatt should be part of it.
No, there. I'm totally with Emily. There's got to be some
threshold. I moderated
a
forum. He was on it, and then he acquitted himself as he could.
You know what this proves, Kelly? That you didn't see the debate I moderated between the five candidates for lieutenant governor 4 years ago. It was the worst night
of
my life.
And I've used the quote a thousand times
from
that. I think it was that Barbara Johnson when she said something about La La Land.
Yes. I don't remember.
I enjoyed that, actually.
Well, that's one. Okay, now, Emily, this is the moment we wait for every week. At least some of us do. And we missed it. And by the way, I should say, Emily really made a representation she didn't honor. She told us that even though I'm on vacation, she told Marjorie and me, I'm going to call in with Emily's list. And then the morning of, what was your pathetic excuse?
I was on vacation.
Well, no, we knew you were on vacation. Okay, she's not on vacation anymore.
I don't know.
Here it is.
Incomprehensible. It's out of control. How about common sense? Doesn't matter. Why not? This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy. It's your right. Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
It's like a Friday without sunshine. When I don't hear that, it is finally back. Okay, take it away, Emily
Rooney. I have two lists. I'm going to start with my more fun one.
Okay.
All right. Here are the five ways you know that summer is over.
Okay.
Number one, you know summer is over when you have to stop wearing your white pants. Not because it's past Labor Day, but because they have stains all over them.
That's very
Is
nice.
It true?
No, that's real. I don't have
white pants,
but
only
I understand the concept.
Season. One, you know, you can only wear them one season, then you got to throw them
Excellent
out.
Start, Emily.
All right, good. You know summer is over when you've even considered putting on a pair of socks or worse, a pair of pantyhose.
I'm not even thinking of putting on pantyhose, so I can't relate to that.
You know summer is over when you start fearing a Red Sox collapse.
It's not going to happen, though.
I started fearing last night, even they were way ahead. I turned off to start watching the
tennis.
Then
they were behind, and then they were ahead.
I couldn't believe it. And I started getting that feeling that there was going to be a collapse.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
All right. This is a personal one of mine. But you know summer's over when you've already started eating winter squash.
Oh,
that's
that
me.
That is. Yeah, that's really, that is a very bad sign.
And finally, Callie, I know you're going to disagree with me on this,
well,
but you know summer is over when you're already dreading the holiday season.
Oh, no, I love the holiday
season. You do love the holiday season?
Yes, I do.
What do you love about the holiday season?
Fast forward.
The family deal?
Yeah, the family deal, but I just enjoy all the stuff that comes with it. I decorate my office, as Emily knows, and she's disgusted by it.
Yeah. So I've been with you through Christmas season. Is that true?
Ethnic winter wonderland.
Oh, just the whole thing with the parties and the shopping and the... No.
You're a Scrooge-like soul around. I mean, I'm totally
I've become
with you.
One.
As Charlie Baker said to me yesterday when I told him on the radio that I didn't like his video, he says, well, Jim, you don't like any candidate who loves his children. So they're
oh, wow.
Whoa, Charlie.
Right, now I have a true confessions list.
This is
a little
okay,
bit
go
more
ahead.
Serious.
Okay,
but
go ahead.
These are things that I just didn't know anything about or I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I admit I never heard of Molly until that girl overdosed and died.
Well.
MDMA, never. I mean, I've heard of ecstasy, Special K, all. Never heard of it. And to learn that it is so prevalent, and now they're shutting down these concerts, and I mean, I feel like I should have known about it.
By the way, I've spoken to a lot of parents, and I know Marjorie has too. She wrote a column about this a couple of days ago. In our generation, who have kids who are 20-somethings, I cannot tell you how many of them have said when they asked their kids about it in the last few days, the honest kids have said, straight kids who were
everybody
leading,
does it.
Everybody. I mean, everybody.
I
may be a bit of an exaggeration, but it is really widespread.
Never heard of it.
Nor had I.
Never heard of twerking until the Miley Cyrus thing.
Well, I have to say,
never
I
heard
had.
Of it. Yeah.
Wow. What do you think of that? By the way, I know this is old news.
I thought it was cute.
Ugh,
no.
Disgusting.
No.
I thought it was fine.
Low rent, untalented.
Well, all those things are.
Why do you think? Why are you with me
well,
on this?
Well, aside from, I'll tack on to your point, which was low rent and untalented. It also was exploitative.
Who's untalented? Miley Cyrus?
Totally.
Yes.
But
and then she was being exploitative of some black
Thicke.
Artists. No, not black. Not Robin Thicke. Of some black artists. I mean, Robin Thicke has
they were in the
separate,
skit together.
I know
in
they
black
were,
artists
but,
who do this.
Yeah.
See.
You know, and it just was, really?
Yeah.
I've seen worse.
By the way, this is fair. We should
say. Of course, we've all seen worse.
Marjorie and I discussed this years ago in the Caribbean and places like that. This is a fairly this and much more. I remember when Akon was huge when he had more number one hits than what's his name.
All right, I'm admitting I never knew anything about it.
Right, in any case, go ahead.
This is an embarrassing one. I didn't know that group that protested like at the John Kerry event the other day and everything had a name.
Code Pink.
Code Pink. I didn't know.
They've been
Code
protesting
Pink?
Stuff in Washington forever.
Oh, for God's sake.
I didn't know they had a formal name.
Well, you shouldn't be embarrassed by the twerking or by the Molly thing.
Admitting.
This one you should be embarrassed
by. All right, finally, Callie, you're going to really be embarrassed for me on this one.
Yeah.
I didn't know Katie Couric had a serious boyfriend.
What?
I didn't know. I knew about
that.
I knew about the one that was 17 years younger, but I didn't know about this guy,
There's
John
like
Molnar.
There's been like five or six people in between. Then she got
I didn't
this
know.
Other guy.
Didn't know. There
well, I have
go.
To say, that was very impressive on your. Before you go, ordinarily it's Emily's List, and you tell us what's on TV tonight, and you go, Callie Krolcic, can I ask you a question for a second, please?
Sure.
Have you seen this issue?
I have not. No.
There is a, I don't know if I can say this, but I'm about to say. Have you seen the picture of, I guess, what I would describe as the leggy blonde sitting in the back of a. In fact, why don't you take a look at this? This leggy blonde on the back, page 124 and 5 of this, sitting in the back of a sports car. Who is that?
God. Emily Rooney, what are you doing?
Could you describe this? You're good creating word pictures. Describe the picture if you can, please, Carol Crossley.
She is propped up on the
propped.
Back seat of a convertible with a lot of leg showing, a very high slit, not anchorwoman-like.
Looking fabulous, though, would you agree?
Wow.
Okay, so what? Can you explain this to
All right,
us, please?
I'm blaming Marjorie Egan for this.
Because she's not here?
Well, first, she's not here, and she's not here to defend herself.
Okay, but
a couple months ago, Marjorie came up to me and said, you know, one of the things I really like about you, Emily, you have no vanity. I said, what? What do you mean I have no vanity? You never wear makeup. You come in the office wearing blue jeans. I said, yeah, but I make up for it, you know, later in the day. So I wanted to show
Is that one of your father's sports cars?
That is, well, that was my father's. 1966 Sunbeam Tiger.
Car.
Or the V8 engine.
So Andy Rooney's car,
I had it restored.
Emily Rooney propped up, as Kelly said.
So do you drive it?
Yeah, I drove it last night.
You
did?
My God. Took it out for a spin.
With one of those skirts that slid up?
You know, this true story. You're not going to believe me, but
yes,
I sat in that thing, and the skirt ripped up another 3 inches.
Come on.
I'm afraid
no,
not.
I'll bring it in. You can see the string hanging.
We're looking at all our producers. Not one of them is behind. Look at the looks on their faces. They're all shaking their head. Emily,
they're
Rooney,
all jealous.
What's going on? I know you. Well, first of all, forget tonight. You mentioned tonight. Next week, what's happening with these mayoral debates?
Yeah,
when do they start?
Because we've got four mayoral forums, 7 o'clock. It's going to be on 89.7.
Hour long, yes.
Hour long on Greater Boston at 7 and on 89.7.
Right.
Three different people each night. We picked them at random by lottery. Monday is Mike Ross, Rob Consalvo, and David James Wyatt.
He's
said he'd come.
Up.
We heard from him today.
He was on a forum.
We've had a heck of a time getting in touch with him, but he's coming.
What magazine do you expect to be in by the time you're here next week? Do you have any idea? I mentioned to you yesterday, here, is when she was discussing this with Marjorie, and I saw it. I said, the only time Marjorie, I'm aware, has been on a magazine cover, she was on the sultry picture of Emily Rooney. Marjorie was on the cover of Brookline magazine, sitting in her house with her 9-pound dog on her lap.
With a long skirt.
Her and Harry the P, best dog from C to C. Emily Rooney.
Little sweater that's with a collar.
It was.
Pan
it was
collar,
from Talbots, I'm sure. Emily, great to see you.
Thanks,
Emily,
thanks,
welcome
Callie.
Back. Nice to see you. Coming up in a couple of seconds is our weekly Friday quiz. Who's on it, Callie Krolcic? Do you know?
Two comedians, and they face off over the latest headlines. That's next on 89.7 WGBH.
It's the first wide-open mayoral race in Boston in a generation, with a dozen candidates vying for the seat. I'm Emily Rooney. Next week, join WGBH News for a special mayoral forum, each night at 7. We host three candidates a night until you've met them all.
and hear their plans for the future of the city. That's next week on Greater Boston on WGBH2 and here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Sullivan Tire and Auto Service, family-owned and operated and committed to serving New England for over 56 years, offering over 60 auto service locations throughout New England. Information and locations at sullivantire.com. And the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. Marjorie is off. She'll be back on Monday. Callie Crossley continues this sit-in. Have you ever hosted the news quiz before?
I have not.
This is very exciting for you,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, particularly because this is our Friday news quiz. This is our last Comic Standing edition. We're joined by comedians Chris Tabb.
Hey.
Say hello. Hey. Say something, Chris.
What's going on?
That's it?
How you feel?
Okay, we're fine.
And also, I'm running for mayor.
You are? It's a little late for that.
We're strategizing to get you out now.
It doesn't matter. There's 300 people running. It doesn't matter.
And the other comedian, self-described, is Corey Manning. Hello again, yes, Corey.
Hello. Good to be here. Good to be back. I am not running for mayor. I'm running for a job.
Okay, fine. Well, maybe you'll get one after today. They're the only urban comedy duo in the country. Chris Tabb has appeared on the Food Network. Corey Manning has appeared on the Nickelodeon Network. My sense, you two, is when comedians work together, they act like they're really close and great buddies and supportive, but there is huge cutthroat competition, Corey. Is that a fair statement?
I would say that not only is it a fair statement, not only are we cutthroat, we really do not like each other.
Well, that's good.
Not at all. He's like 9 feet tall. You didn't tell the people
that.
No,
he's a large man. He is.
He's like 9 feet tall. I don't like that.
I usually get that from small people.
You mean physically small, or do you mean in other ways?
Hey, I've seen a couple of tweets. Let's just say that there's other attributes of Mr. Tabb. that have been tweeted upon.
You gonna take that, Chris?
In less than 3 characters.
Oh wow!
You know what? It's a family show. Okay, it's a family
show.
Well,
no longer it is. Now, do you guys know how this quiz works?
Yes.
You, Chris Tabb?
I'm slightly familiar.
Okay, fine. Here's the deal.
Aren't I on a winning streak? Haven't I won the last 8?
Have you ever won, actually? You've been on a couple of times.
I beat the drama guy.
The drama guy
you brought in. Yeah. I beat Billy Ray Cyrus. I'm dominant in this.
Billy Ray Cyrus' legs being beat, from what I'm told. Now, Corey, you were on my television quiz. How did that go for you?
That was awesome. It was awesome.
No, I don't mean that was it awesome. How'd you do?
I won.
He lost.
I'm undefeated. I am undefeated. It's because the other contestants were scared of him.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Okay, now here's the deal. Arbitrarily, we flipped a coin. Callie Crossley is going to ask questions of
what
Corey Manning.
What does arbitrarily mean?
Thank you. That's the first question. And I'm asked questions.
You know, I'm Boston Public. What does arbitrarily mean?
Let's take it away. Here's the first question from Callie to Corey.
Okay, here we go.
A political hopeful got into a shouting match at a Brooklyn bakery this week. Have a listen.
I say you wait till I walk out to say anything. That's courage. That's courage. You wait till I walk out to say. Okay. Yeah, you're not afraid of anything. Don't use language to discuss things.
You have a nerve to even walk around in public.
And you're a perfect person.
I'm not.
You're
perfect.
My judge.
But
you're my judge. What rabbi taught you that?
I didn't do anything.
What rabbi taught you that you're my judge?
You're fine. You talk to God and work out your problems, but stay out of the public eye.
Okay, Corey Manning, who was that candidate?
The situation.
No. It was a situation, but no.
I just knew it was a situation.
Do you know who it is or no?
No, I don't know.
You can steal this question, Chris Tabb.
First of all, I don't understand why he doesn't just change his name.
Yeah, that's a
Gordon Jenkins or something.
Oh, was
that's
that?
Big Tony Wiener.
Now, it's particularly fitting in the light of the charges you levied against your colleague here, Chris Tabb, a few minutes ago, of course.
Exactly. Now who's the little wiener?
If you were living in New York City, I know your boss, would you vote for this guy, Corey?
Would I vote for him?
Yeah,
I would vote for him.
I would take his phone away. I would definitely take his phone away.
Many people have made the mistake of sending something to the wrong person.
You ever done that?
I take the 5th on the grounds that somebody may know my Facebook status.
Fair enough. So at the end of a half a round, Chris Tabb, you stole the question.
He tweeted out a topless photo to his mom before. It was ridiculous.
Oh my God.
I saw that, but his mom showed it to me. Now, Chris Tabb, here's your first question.
Let's do it.
Who is the person who is being described here?
Speaking of old, this is a big story today. Senator
He's under fire for being caught playing poker on his smartphone during a Senate hearing on Syria. Yeah. Even worse, it was strip poker. That was the worst part.
Wow.
We saw much more of him than we want to see. Yeah.
Now, that was a great comedian from Brookline, obviously. What senator is he talking about, Chris Tabb?
Man, I remember the photo. I remember the picture.
He's making this up.
No, I remember. It was like over his shoulder.
Yeah, it was, actually.
He was Senator Palpatine, along with Star Wars.
That's close enough. Now, can you steal this, Corey Manning, or no?
Are you kidding me?
No, I can't see
you can't kidding me right now.
I can't. Where's my Google line? Can I phone a friend?
No, you can't.
No.
The answer is Senator John McCain. That is
I knew
McCain.
That.
Well,
I
it doesn't that. Matter. If
no,
you
I knew it because he had a flip phone in his
and
hand.
And he lost.
That's
he lost
much,
the game.
Okay, there's too many. There was too many other jokes in that little thing right there with John McCain and a flip phone. That's
he had a flip phone. He
one round
get a
down.
Signal.
You're winning, Chris Tabb, amazingly. One
Let
to nothing.
Out. Nothing.
Round two, Kelly Cross.
All right.
Here we go.
What de facto U.S. ambassador is back on the road this week?
Basketball diplomacy tour. A follow-up visit to North Korea's dictator, Kim Jong-un.
Let's come over here to visit him, to see how he's doing, see how the family's doing, and just revisit the country.
The NBA Hall of Famer turned international diplomat told reporters he was planning a five-day visit.
Who was that?
Okay, first of all, he's speaking to a dictator.
Yeah.
It's a common theme on the show today. Dennis Rodman.
Hey, that would be correct.
You're correct.
Love that bell. Don't you love that bell?
Yes.
I love
we bell. Are going to hell in a handbasket as a country if Dennis Rodman is overseas talking to people.
He's our chief. Himself.
Come on.
It's quite a twosome, by the way. Yeah. How tall is Dennis Rodman?
He's like 9'11".
Okay, so Dennis Rodman's like a 6'10", thin, muscular black guy.
Yeah. Right.
And Kim, what's we'd which Kim Jong? Which one is this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
He's a little like...
It's sort of like a little, maybe. He's the size of Snooki.
Yeah, a little Pillsbury Doughboy kind feet. Of thing.
It sounds like a story in a comic book. Like,
actually, there is a comic book. I read that after Rodman came back the first time from his visit to North Korea. There's some sort of comic book thing. In any case, you're on the board, so you're not totally humiliated with your friends.
X-Men.
Now, are you a Boston guy by life?
I'm originally from North Carolina, but I've been in Boston so long, I might as well just...
How long so long?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
That's sort of long. And what's you're like
accent.
A lifer, right?
Still
you're a lifer.
I'm born and bred, baked bread. What do you want from
the
me?
Whole
I'm
deal.
Boston Public.
Where are you from again?
Mattapan.
Mattapan.
Which is an Indian word that means many black people.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew that.
I did
but
not.
You got a Wikipedia.
Well, you do now.
No, I do.
Write that down.
Okay, she wrote it. She wrote
I
it.
Did.
Write that
I did.
Down.
I did not realize there was so many black people actually in Boston when I moved up here.
It's what do you mean by that?
That was, I mean, I noticed there were a lot of black people. Like, all five of them, Ronnie, Bobby, Nicky, Mike.
And they're all running for mayor.
Yeah, that's right.
All of them are in the mayor.
Okay, Chris Tabb, you can retake the lead here if you don't embarrass yourself.
Let's do it.
Which actor announced his retirement this week?
You see, Danny, I can deal with the bullets and the bombs and the blood. I don't want money and I don't want medals. What I do want... is for you to stand there and with your Harvard mouth extend me some courtesy. You gotta ask me nicely.
Colonel Jessup, if it's not too much trouble, I'd like a copy of the transfer order. Sir.
No problem.
That's a great scene.
Probably
Who's
one of the
actor?
Greatest scenes in movie history. And, okay, it's funny that he's going to retire because I think he's going to turn over his Lakers season tickets now that he thinks that Kobe's on his last leg. So I think he's going to slink away. It would be Jack Nicholson.
That is correct. By the way, bonus, what movie is that from? Obviously, you love the movie. What's the movie?
A Few Good Men.
That's a
good Did guy. You order the code red? You okay. can't handle the truth.
Now we're going to find out, Corey, if you can handle the truth.
No.
Okay. Here we go.
I'm afraid now.
What recently converted health nut is having some relapses?
This is crazy. The newest rumor in Washington is that has been cheating on his vegan diet. Yeah, the most damning evidence is a blue dress with a splotch of gravy on it.
That's a pretty good line.
Yeah.
Wow. Who is it?
Wow.
Oh,
wow.
Don't look at Chris Tabb.
No, because I eat. I want the Friendlies guy back in here to bring me a bacon cheeseburger.
What's the guy with the short shorts? I can't think of his name.
I can't.
Okay.
Darn it.
Chris Tapp, here you go again.
Who is not a Laker fan, Richard Simmons.
I was trying to.
No.
No.
It's not Richard.
Are you all
it
kidding
me? It is Richard Simmons.
Are you kidding me?
It is.
I want to tell you it's how
Susan
pathetic
Powder.
You
Susan
both
Powder.
Are. Can we play the soundbite one
yeah,
more
really?
Time?
I can't believe you all can't get this.
I wasn't listening.
Listen to the soundbite, and we're going to give you a second chance, which
yeah,
we never
okay.
do because we feel bad for you.
Here we go.
Here it is.
North Carolina.
This is crazy. The newest rumor in Washington is that has been cheating on his vegan diet. Yeah, the most damning evidence is a blue dress with a splotch of gravy on it.
Okay. Blue dress. Bill Clinton, Corey
yeah,
Mann.
Yeah. Come on,
vegan?
Corey. Yes.
He's
been
vegan,
vegan
he is or
for
was,
years.
Right.
Look at the dress
yes.
that tipped him off.
And he's seriously vegan.
Oh.
I mean, he's vegan.
I'm a bad
I thought it was. I thought he was on an intern diet.
No.
See, aren't you glad, sorry you brought that up?
Yeah.
Now, what's the score here, judges? Not that
it's
anybody
like
cares.
19-6.
Hold up. I just got the reference to help.
Will, do you have any idea? Will Roselip is in the studio. Have any idea what the score is?
I hit a three-pointer.
3-1? No, we just got another one.
3-1.
I think it's 3-2.
3-1.
No, it's not 3-1, Chris.
If you count the second chance, then Corey has two.
Okay, we're counting the second chance.
We should.
We should.
Chris Tab.
What business are you guys running
one
here?
1 + 1 = 2.
Chris, are you appearing anywhere ever or no? What are you doing?
I'm hitting the road next week.
Where
we're
going
to be in Connecticut.
You are? Little, do you have a website? You
little
might
sassy
want somebody
club
to go
like
to the
Joker's
thing? People
Wild.
List. Where's that?
Joker's Wild is in New Haven, Connecticut, going with a
You were nervous
on.
For a second. You didn't remember what town
no,
I was in, did
you? You never think I know where I'm going to be. I know
because
where I'm going
to
be.
Because when someone says to you, where are you going to be, and you go,
you know what? It's
in
a
Connecticut,
performer's life. It's a performer's life. I'm all over the place.
See
I was
if
just
he can
at
do
Dunkin' Donuts 3 minutes ago.
So,
I don't know
where
Where
can
my
we find you
are.
Next, and what's your website?
Foxwoods Casino on the 18th.
Really?
I'll be at Zanies in St. Charles, Illinois, the 16th through the 19th of October.
Zanies.
Yeah, it's
St.
real nice.
Charles?
St. Illinois? Charles, yeah. Mm.
I
yeah.
Never
at least
heard
you
it.
Know where you're going.
I know where. I don't know where I'm going. I just know the name of it.
I'm
going to have to Google it to find out.
What's your, you have a website?
Yeah, CoreyManning.com.
Well, that's pretty odd. What's your deal?
What? It's something. I'm on the Facebook.
Oh, my God.
You know, the whole
on
website
Twitter.
Thing.
This
I'm
Chris
on
Tab.
Facebook,
so
Twitter.
Bad.
And
you
people
can find
don't
Chris
use
Tab
websites.
On blackplanet.com.
Okay, Chris, we're going to bail you out here, okay?
Thanks for telling people that I'm black.
Here is Steven, Caliente, then. Caliente.
Here is Stephen Colbert taking some jabs. This is for Chris Tab, by the way. At a place which is already hurting. Listen.
$18 billion. And Detroit borrowed those billions from some pretty serious people. If they don't get paid, they've threatened to cut off Michigan's thumb. Now, it turns out RoboCop was an optimistic view of Detroit's future.
Okay, so here's the question. In addition to Stephen Colbert, who else, prominent, took a whack at Detroit this week? Big time, you took a whack.
Oh, my man. See, whenever someone is leaving a job, that's when things get interesting. Yeah. He knows he's leaving. I can say what I want.
Who would that be?
Obama's stealing paper right now. I mean, it's my last ride. What are you going to do to me?
What? Who is it, Chris?
My man, the Honorable Mayor Thomas Menino.
That's right. He was in the Sunday Times Magazine in a Q&A. Rippin Menino him. Said he would blow Rippin up Detroit him. And start over. And then speaking of professional basketball, Dave Bing, former, I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame or something,
yes,
I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Former huge
is.
NBA guy who's now the mayor. Lashed out and said, I think pretty appropriately, that you don't, when you're from a place that lived through the marathon, I wouldn't be talking about blowing up. But you know what, to Menino's credit, which is not doesn't happen enough in politics, he immediately said, I apologize, I was wrong. How often do you hear that? You ever say that?
Yeah. No.
I didn't think so.
Thank you. Isn't being the owner of an internet search mechanism?
No.
Not that being.
No. Can you take a point?
Not that being.
A point from him.
No, that's actually Dave Google. That's his brother.
Who
his brother.
Take
Bing.
A point from
oh
him.
God.
Hashtag idiot.
All right. Well, Corey, you have a chance to redeem yourself because I am sure you're up on the hip hop music.
Okay.
So, can you recognize what local entity is behind this killer hip hop track?
Come on, let's go.
We're on this ride together. Going where we gotta go. Let's all stay. Going where we gotta go. Come on, come on. Let's all stay alert. Safety first. You want to get there, put safety first. Safety first.
As you know, in hip-hop music, the flow is really important. So okay. I want you to note that they put it in the lyrics, and they did it in the execution.
They did an execution.
We need cameras in here because Callie Crossley was doing the Dougie.
She was getting it in. She was working it out.
I
think she was motivated by the last segment. We were talking about twerking.
She was about to push the chair back and stop twerking. It was ridiculous.
All right, Corey Manning, you've deflected enough. And the answer is?
Exactly.
So you want to know the artist?
The artist?
No.
Yeah, no.
Oh, the entity.
What? Yes.
Oh, I got
Corey
it.
Corey Manning.
We're not talking to you, Chris Tapp,
I know
right
you're
now.
Not. The
entity that
I'm
put
Boston
that together.
Public.
Yes. Yeah.
Help myself.
Trojans?
Safety first.
Safety first.
Family show.
Safety first.
Family
we're
show.
We're all shaking our heads, by the way. Just so you know, there's no camera. Tab, Crossley, and Browdy are all shaking our heads like this is
okay.
It's almost over.
No.
Okay, right, Chris, you want to steal this baby?
Boom, boom. The MBTA.
Are you
somebody
me?
Give yeah. you the answers to the questions?
Boom, boom.
No, he rides the T all the time. That's
listen,
what it is.
Listen, when I'm not on tour, I'm watching television, and mm-hmm. that's how I operate. You
I
see?
Hear you.
When I'm
I
not
hear
busy,
you.
I'm doing stuff. I'm watching TV. Okay. I know
by the way, you only have line. 7 more minutes, Chris, to figure out what your website is. Okay,
now. Let's do this. Anybody who wants to build me a website, hit me up at
ChrisTabShow@gmail.com. Okay, fine. You're on Facebook, though, aren't you?
I certainly am. The whole world is. The
and you're on Twitter, too.
I am tweeting like a madman.
By the way, the finest tweet, I read your tweet, the finest tweet you've ever, ever tweeted was what?
Tell them. Tell them.
No, you tell them.
The back of the MBTA bus.
What was on it, please?
Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. In full dynamic HD color.
It was beautiful.
It was ridiculous.
I laughed. I cried when I saw it. It was unbelievable. Okay, here's your question. Enough of that, Chris Tabb.
I almost rear-ended the bus.
For weeks, the identity of someone's father was unknown. Don't. Okay. Yesterday at a press conference out of D.C., the world learned that there was a breakthrough in the paternity puzzle. He's getting nervous with this question. Here's a clip.
I just hope it's not me.
Exactly. Here's a clip from that paternity announcement. Please listen.
We conducted genetic analysis, and we were able to determine the paternity of both. And we are proud to announce that the sire is Tien Tien.
Now, who, obviously, is Tien Tien the father of? Who would that be, Chris Tabb, please?
The prequel to The Phantom Menace? What is happening here? Tien Tien. I avoid any paternity issues at all. I've had my fair share.
You know you have Maury on speed dial.
Look at the eyes. Look at the eyes.
Look at the baby eyes. Now, Corey Manning, even though you're saying you're not the father, do you want to steal? That'll be determined
I'm gonna,
by the testing.
For it.
Look do you
the,
have any idea who's Tien
Tien? I think I have it.
Go ahead.
The panda.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
The young panda cub, his latest addition to the National Zoo.
Can we have some human references in this, please?
He was actually on Maury the other day.
Now I'm being blamed for animal impregnation? This is...
Hey, Corey, you get an extra bonus, right? Do you know what gender is? Y'all have a 50-50 chance here. What gender would the panda cub be, Corey?
The cub is a boy.
That is close, but I'd be wrong. Yeah, you said it with great certainty.
I mean, the father is a boy.
No cleaning up.
Okay, fine. Next
Too
question.
Bad.
Here's my question. Did anyone ask the panda if she'd like to be pregnant?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We did a poll.
Tien Tien asked.
This is really one of the worst
Keep up here.
Okay, here's the next question to Corey Manning from Kelly Crossley, who's sitting in for Marjorie Egan today.
We're going to play you a vintage TV ad.
We are.
The question is, what is the ad for? And why is it in the news this week? One of my favorites.
He didn't get color TV.
Anthony Martinelli lives in Boston, on Street, in the Italian North End. The home for more than 50 years of the company. Anthony knows a lot about local Italian customs. And he knows a lot about most days, Anthony takes his time going home. But not today. Today is Wednesday. And as every family in the North End of Boston will tell you, Wednesday is day.
If you could see Tab and Manning in the studio.
That's exactly how the panda
this
got
sounds
pregnant.
So inappropriate.
What's the question, Kelly? I don't even remember it anymore.
It's a vintage TV ad, and the question is, what is the ad for, and why is it in the news this week?
Great question.
Oh.
Hump Day?
I love that ad, by the way, but no.
No, I'm lost. I'm at a loss.
How about it, Krista?
I got you. Okay.
Are you kidding me?
The ad is for Prince Spaghetti for the pasta.
What?
And Anthony Martignetti, who was the
Martinelli
kid.
To
Martinelli,
you.
Yes, who was running through.
Okay.
Married the Octomom. So it's a incredible situation.
He gets half a point. What's the truth, Kelly? Why is this week?
This week, Prince Spaghetti turned 100.
Do you believe they did half a bell? Can you do half a bell again? That was really impressive. That was amazing. I never had that before.
Remix.
Now, before we go to the...
And they starred a middle-aged Anthony, the kid who was in the original.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know. That's a great little factoid.
I
love
that.
Yeah. Okay.
The great, amazing part is you've been hanging out with Jared from Subway. So he hasn't had spaghetti in years. Hashtag vegan diet.
On him and Clinton.
I know.
You know what he's looking for? Your website, actually.
What's up? Anthony, holler at me.
What's the score before we go to the bonus round?
300.
Do they have any idea? 5.5 for Chris Tabb.
Blowout.
To 3 for Corey Manning. But the bonus questions are worth extra points, so here's your chance.
They're giving me the bill backwards.
Now, here's the deal. Since you both are in the profession, apparently, of making people laugh.
Let's do it.
We're going to ask you questions about nitrous oxide, which is commonly known as laughing gas. Callie, take the first question, please.
The sedative qualities of laughing gas were discovered in the late 1700s, but it took nearly half a century for the medical community to use it as a form of anesthesia. Why did it take so long? A. One of the leading pioneers in the field stopped his research entirely and left the medical profession to host laughing gas parties across the country. They were the 18th century version of today's rave. He'd rake in $400 per party.
Wow.
Or B. At one of the first medical demonstrations before an arena of 100 doctors and medical students, a patient was over-sedated and died on the spot. It would be years before anyone thought about using nitrous oxide as anesthesia. Or C. Patients were spooked by the name nitrous oxide. They thought it sounded poisonous. So is it A. Leading pioneer, 18th century version of today's rave? B. Arena of 100 doctors and medical students watching a patient over-sedated and died? Or C, people spooked by the name nitrous oxide because they thought it sounded poisonous?
D, they were laughing so hard they couldn't take them seriously. first one to chime in? I'm going to go
it's
with
you. No, it's
you.
You.
For
you.
B. It's on you.
You're B. on B, so you say before this is the before an arena of 100 doctors and medical students, patient was over-sedated and died?
Yes.
That wrong?
What?
That means bad news. Now, do you have any idea what the answer is, Krista?
I'm going with C.
Well, let me tell you, that is also wrong.
What are you talking about, Willis? I was offered nitrous oxide at the Rogers Middle School in 1986.
So do you believe the truth is the guy was hosting laughing gas parties for $400?
Yeah.
And you can do that if the comedy thing doesn't work out.
Yeah,
just spray the audience.
That's the truth.
Now, here's the deal. This is our final question.
That's how the movie Helter Skelter ended.
This is for you, Chris Tabb. The earlier questions, you don't get penalized. But to make it exciting, if you get this right, you win. If you get it wrong, you lose 3 points and Corey wins. Okay, here it is.
I like that.
Wow. Thank you. How did the first pioneer of laughing gas describe what it felt like to be under the influence? A, what joy, what rapture. B, exultation has claimed every fiber of my body and spun me out a happy drunk. Or C, a thrilling came on and uneasiness was for a few minutes swallowed up in pleasure. Which one is it? And the whole match sits on the answer to this question. What is
it?
Keep doing that, Corey.
You know what?
What's the answer?
I hate it. And could you put your shirt on while you do it? It's not making me comfortable. I'm going with A.
Okay, you go A. If A is correct, you're the winner.
Uh-oh.
If A is incorrect, Corey Manning, your friend, is the winner.
He doesn't have an answer?
Judges, is A correct?
Oh. Undefeated. That's right, baby. I want to thank everybody who made this possible.
Okay, fine, thank
me.
You.
Me.
Corey Manning. You're at CoreyManning.com or .org.
.com or TheCoreyManning@gmail.com.
And what's your Twitter
Chris
thing?
Chris Tabb Show, @ChrisTabbShow.
We love you both. Hey, it's great to see you guys. Chris Tabb, Corey Manning, good guys. Callie, it was great doing the hour with you.
Thank you,
great
Jim.
To see you. Marjorie will be back on Monday,
cheated.
So will I. Monday on Open Mic, Reverend Eugene Rivers.
Cheated.
will join us. You were not cheated, Chris Tabb. Our show is produced by Anna McGowan, Chelsea Murs, Sean Parker, and Will Roselip. Alan Matt is engineered today's show.
You didn't answer one question.
We'll be back on Monday.
Like 10 questions.
Are they still talking? We'll be back on Monday. Hey, by the way, you guys just asked. Didn't you just say, Jim, do you have a piece in the Sunday Globe magazine? Yes, I do.
I did.
On college tuition. You should read it and then get back to me. Let me know what you think. Have a wonderful weekend, Kelly. It's great to see you. I am Jim Browdy. She's Callie Crossley. Chris Tabb and Corey Manning say goodbye. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday.